Conversations with Master, Swamiji tells us some things that Master said about Jesus and Krishna and the beginning of our line of masters. In Conversations with Master, Swami talks about how this path descended, and it's really, really wonderful to read about it. And what our theme for tonight is what we've gotten ourselves involved in, and really how thrilling it is. And I don't mean to present this in any way, oh, aren't we lucky to be part of this path, as opposed to any other path. But it's in the same way that you would celebrate your own family and rejoice in your own children and rejoice in your husband or your wife or your friends. You don't think of that in terms of, you know, there's no other good husbands or children or friends in the world. But you think, oh, how grateful I am that God has brought me this particular experience for me to enjoy. So it's in that light that I want to speak of it, because I think it's praiseworthy. And we should rejoice every day. If it isn't your habit to fall on your feet, fall on the ground every day on your knees, even a full prostration repeatedly on the ground, thanking God for bringing you to some understanding of the spiritual life, perhaps you could consider it as a practice. Because really there's there's nothing comparable to having been given the keys to awakening. Every week in the Festival of Light, we say into our hands have been given the sacred keys of awakening. We just say that as if that were just such a common thing. But think how many incarnations we've had to wander before those sacred keys of awakening were put into our hands. And think what all of our lives were like before we had them. You know, I myself was very fortunate, and I don't literally lie on the ground and thank God every day, but every day of my life I've been grateful that I was brought to the path early. But I remember vividly what it felt like not to have this path, and my absolute sense of desperation that there had to be something, there had to be some answer, and it just couldn't possibly be what people were doing. Just wandering around, living, earning money, getting older, eventually getting old and dying. That just simply couldn't be it. But into our hands were given the sacred keys of awakening. And it was no accident that we're drawn to this, and it's no accident that those keys were available, because it has been the divine commitment of this line of gurus to provide for those who are in tune with this particular ray exactly that. And they have been offering this sacrifice. No greater love can there be than this, from a life of infinite joy and freedom in God, willingly to embrace limitation, pain, and death for the salvation of mankind. Such ever has been the sacrifice of the great masters for the world. And that's what we're living in. We're living in this line of gurus who have given themselves to us so that we would not be lost forever in delusion. And Master writes, Swamiji writes about Master saying that really Krishna was the first, and he wasn't the first ever, because the way Master describes in Autobiography of a Yogi, this is just one little planet we're talking about, and this little planet has gone through its ages of time. We're now moving in out of the age of materialism into the age of energy, out of Kali Yuga upward into the higher age of Dwapara Yuga. But this is a cycle that has repeated itself over and over and over again. Every 26,000 years on this planet, we crest and then we peak and then we decline and then we rise up again, not as individuals, but as civilizations and as energy on this planet. It's actually a physical phenomenon based on the relationship of this physical planet to the grand central source, as they call it in the scriptures, of the energy that animates this solar system and makes it happen at all. As we follow an elliptical orbit moving closer to that center, more energy comes to this planet. This planet can sustain a higher quality of life. Human bodies become more refined. Human consciousness becomes more expanded inherently. It's not, however, as if we just hang out here and by sheer dint of not leaving or reincarnating over and over again advance spiritually. We, as individual souls, act out our own drama on the background, the drama of the planet as the background, and we're drawn to the planet that is in the state of evolution that is right for us at this time. And Master said there are many, many planets, and we don't always come back to the same one, and if we're not refined enough for this planet, when it's refined, we go somewhere else. And if we're too gross, if we're too refined, we don't have to come here. But this saga of these masters has been a saga that's played out at this particular cycle. And interestingly, Master is here as we transition from Kali Yuga back up into Dwapara, and Krishna came as we transitioned from Dwapara down into Kali, down through the bottom of the loop. And that's as far back as the memory of what we're doing goes. We go back to the Bhagavad Gita. We honor Krishna more as Babaji, because that was the subsequent incarnation that's been relevant to us. But it's Babaji Krishna, because it was Krishna who set that energy. And the way Master talked about it is, he talked about it, now is the time for this East and West to come together. And he said it started with the East, the spirituality of India as expressed by Krishna, because spirit has to come first. And then the second half of the equation is the material capacity, enthusiasm, and wisdom of the West, especially America. And so the responsibility, as Master describes it, for Western spirituality has been given to Christ, to Jesus Christ, even though, of course, he was an Oriental, but that those little distinctions don't make much of a difference. His is the tradition that has animated the West, and Krishna's tradition has been what's animated the East, and the path of self-realization that we follow brings them both together. And each one of these gurus, it's very unusual for so many avatars to be collected in such a focus as we get to experience here. And each one of them sort of moved the power of realization a little farther forward and often offered something special into it. The life of Jesus in so many ways is so similar to the life that we're living right now in a few very interesting and essential aspects. It's pretty much historically accepted, what used to be somewhat esoteric before, that Jesus was part of this remnant of the Jewish people that was called the Essenes. And you have to realize that Jesus was born way down in Kali Yuga, virtually at the bottom of Kali Yuga. 500 AD was the lowest point before things started coming up again. So you can see he was way down in the cycle there. And by the time Jesus was born, the memory of higher teachings had really become obscure, just because consciousness was getting more and more confused, because energy was leaving this planet as the solar system moved farther away from the energy source, and therefore less conscious beings were coming in. But because no planet, or few planets, as Master put it, are entirely dark or entirely light, and because the light had to be preserved for the upward cycle, a little bit of the awareness of the higher teachings was preserved. And Judaism was a true religion, is a true religion, brought by a true master for an age that's a little bit past. You know, Master didn't come to reanimate Judaism, because Jesus came to reanimate Judaism. Of course, in the process, it split. It ended up splitting. But nonetheless, that song that we started, "I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills," is very likely a prayer that Jesus himself would have said or sang or heard. And those direct disciples, if they were acting out the spirit of what they were at that time, that would have been a song that they sang. And so we sort of have all these interweavings. But there was this remnant of the Jewish people who still remembered the true teaching. And the true teaching is not obscure. The true teaching is very simple. It's self-realization. The true teaching isn't some sort of esoteric confusion of something that we can't access, as if people were somehow very different. Self-realization has always been the unifying thread. And they remembered that. But it was not really safe to either teach it or practice it in society as a whole, because the rest of the Jewish people had become quite corrupt. And so it's really, they're not really Jews anymore. They were just the corrupt priesthood which enters into all religions at all times. The real Jews were the Essenes. And they were a little community who lived a little bit apart, who had their own practices, and were in tune with a ray of teaching that nobody else was in tune with, who interacted yet with the whole society, but yet had many things that they didn't share with everyone. And they were a minority. They were misunderstood. They had a vision of where the world was going that other people didn't understand. Does that sound familiar? Right? And when Jesus gave his instructions to his own disciples and spoke to them about what should happen after he passed away, what was it that they did? They formed into communities. They they stood a little apart from society. They pooled their resources. They practiced their new teaching. They supported one another. It was the same teaching, just exactly. It's such a remarkable thing when you just stand back and look at it like that, that the masters have this idea, and the reason they have it is very simple. If no one else around understands, you need the strength of like-minded souls. If you're going to have the power to carry this forth, we need the strength and the protection and the reminder and the example and all the different things that we know about being connected with one another. And it was all exactly true. And those Essene people had this intuition that was no doubt channeled to them by those who were more advanced among them, that a great soul was going to be born. We have a little bit of that, but not very much of it is known now. Who knows? In the years to come, the Dead Sea Scrolls revealed a great many things, and who knows how many other hidden scrolls are there. We have to be a more advanced age before people can accept it. And even if it's found, it gets suppressed. People don't want it to be known. But they knew, they sensed that something was going to happen. Now, isn't that just the way we talk? We know that something is going to happen. And they were not so foolish as they are sometimes portrayed, as to think that the whole planet was going to become perfect. They knew self-realization, but what they understood was that a prayer of love goes up from Earth and God responds. A ray of His consciousness bursts down from the heart of infinity and moves through night skies of consciousness to be born on Earth in human form for the salvation of mankind. And so Christ came. And He came for His own people. And yes, there were some Jews and some not Jews. His own people. Who are the chosen people? God chooses those of every race and nation who with deep love choose thee. And that's who Jesus came for, and that's who Jesus lives for now. It's not enough to sort of presume on His presence. We have to attune ourselves to it. We have to raise ourselves to it. It's not something that comes just from lip service. It's not that God minds if we're presumptuous, but it's attunement that brings it. It's putting ourselves on that vibration. And what was Jesus's vibration? Oh, it was pure love. It was absolute renunciation. It was total dedication to service. If there was any of our masters that absolutely exemplify a total dedication to service, it has to be Christ. His life was so short. And what did He do with it? He was born. He taught in the temple at the age of 12. And then in the Bible, He disappears for a number of years. In fact, again, these things are beginning to come out, but Master just says it as a simple fact. He went to India. And he studied at the feet of the masters. He studied at the feet of Babaji, Lahiri Mahashaya, Sri Yukteswar, who were the three wise men who came to visit Him. The legend of the three wise men is the three gurus of our path. Extraordinary. I don't say that of my own statement. How could I know such a thing? But that's how Master said it, just as simple as that. The three wise men were Sri Yukteswar, Lahiri, and Babaji. And when Jesus attained His youth, He went to India. And He did a sadhana, just like all masters do. Yogananda went for 10 years and trained in his master's hermitage, because if the masters don't train and dedicate themselves and set the example, we don't understand how to do it. Later on, hundreds of years later, ignorant disciples of Jesus made the foolish decision that it would diminish people's faith if they thought Jesus had to study with anyone. So they just took it out of the Bible. But as Master said, they didn't have the nerve to write a new story. But it's so much more interesting what really happened. Because what really happened was this great power of light is set in motion. This great unity of East and West. This great continuous bringing together. And who knows, my friends, how many lifetimes we have stood with these masters. There's wonderful stories told by Edgar Cayce, who was a savant who would go into trances and give people readings about their previous incarnations. He was remarkable and he seemed to be true. But here's something that's so interesting about many of the things he said. People would come to him and they would want to know about their past lives, and he would look back and he would say, You were on the street and Jesus passed by. He turned, the master turned and looked into your eyes. You were there, your hand brushed his cloak. You saw him at the Sea of Galilee. You know, you saw him walking when he was carrying the cross. And then Edgar Cayce would say, everything that's happened since has been simply the working out of the energy that was caused by that moment. Isn't that an extraordinary thought? Believe me, we don't come to this, you know, we don't come to the level of dedication in present in all of you, just in one incarnation. Because you see people around you who, you try as hard as you can to tell them about this teaching. They just don't care, do they? I recall, and I've shared with you, it was so perfect. I was trying to persuade a relative of mine that I was so new on the path, and this is what we always think that they'll be attracted by the oddest things. You pick the oddest things to say. So I started explaining to her that the desire was desire is the source of all suffering. You know, this is not what people want to hear. And so I start telling her this, and I start saying, haven't you noticed when you really want something and then you finally get it, that the fulfillment you have just doesn't work for you in the way that you hoped? And she just really seemed to be with me. She was nodding her head. We were going together. And then before I could say anything else, she said, that's why it's so important to keep wanting new things. Well, that's a creative way to deal with it, isn't it? But that was my first non-conversion. My first training in the ministry, right? A good person she was. No, nothing wrong with her at all. She lived a very honorable life. Compared to many, she was, you know, quite advanced. But she didn't want the sacred keys of awakening. Perhaps she hadn't yet stood on the street and watched Jesus walk by and sacrifice himself completely. That's what Jesus represents to us, just that willingness. I mean, too much is made of the suffering aspect of it. Suffering is not the point, but sacrifice is the point. There can be no greater love can be than this. Willingly to embrace all of this. Why? For the salvation of mankind. And what do we say next in the festival? Here then is the fourth and last stage. And we love hearing that until we realize that the first three applied to us. And that logic says that this fourth one does too. And it's not that we have to then therefore go really be willing to literally die. But every little thing that's asked of us for the good of others that we consider to be just a little bit too much. To hold our tongue and not make that quick retort. To look kindly on someone who is just so exasperating you don't think you can be kind to them one more time. You know, to be sympathetic to someone else's ignorance. To get up and do something serviceful that's needed, even though you're tired and you think somebody else ought to do it. To be willing to meditate, or to pray, or to do healing prayers, or to take care of your body. To exercise, to have a right diet, make a long list of simple things, you know, of such little attitudes is greatness made. Master's words, which I repeat so often, take care of the minutes and the incarnations will take care of themselves. Take care of every little opportunity we have to be Christ-like in our self-offering. And what that means simply is greater love, no greater love can there be than this, the willingness to embrace whatever is asked of us for the salvation of others, that's all. And when we feel weak in that, in the most traditional sense, think to yourself, well, he could carry that cross and willingly give up his whole body and his dignity and everything easily because God asked him to do it and he knew it would help others. And so I can do this little thing. I can stand up and do one more small thing. I can do one more thing with love. I can be kind instead of unkind. I can be sympathetic as he was sympathetic. Master says a great monument of forgiveness was created when he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. There he was being crucified and dying, and his only thought was for the karma of these poor, misguided souls who were doing this to him. Rejecting divine love in the most cruel and impossible way. And he interceded for them. That wasn't just a little prayer. That was an intercession. He allowed that the sacrifice he was offering was for them, too. One last thought, and then we'll go to chanting and meditation here. Swamiji was undergoing a very, very difficult test, and people were mistreating him, something horrible. And he felt, he had to admit, a little bit annoyed with God. Why are you doing this to me? He was praying to Babaji, actually. And all of a sudden, he heard Babaji's voice in his mind. And Babaji said, "They're all my children." It's a very wonderful thought, isn't it? We're all God's children. We're so willing to do things for those that we consider worthy of serving. But oh, what would we be like if God only took care of the best among us? A lot of us would be out in the cold, wouldn't we? What would we be like if the masters only came for the best among us? They come for all of us. Because here then is the fourth and last stage of the soul's long journey. Jesus walked it. Let us walk it with him.